They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Calming the European financial crisis.
By creating a union, a banking union. From APM, American Public Media, I'm David Brancaccio.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Wednesday, May 30th.
Coming up, a new black eye for BlackBerry.
Feeding the Chinese economic giant.
A rival for the Google self-drive car.
Just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
The European Commission has just put out a comprehensive assessment of the continent's financial crisis, and among major recommendations, Europe needs to bring its banking system into closer union so that stronger parts of the EU can help out weaker banks without wrecking the finances of individual governments. The BBC's Andrew Walker joins us from London. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
Andrew, explain to me this banking union. It's about private sector banks, but it's government regulation of those banks.
The idea is basically one of regulation and emergency support for the banks being done as a union across the Eurozone so that you would have common supervision of the banking sector across the Eurozone, probably common deposit insurance across the Eurozone, and a shared financial responsibility for coming to the rescue of banks that are in difficulty.
Now, in the event that the EU swings into action, embraces a banking union, how might it help the debt crisis?
For one thing, I think it might reduce some of the strains on individual countries. If you look at the situation in Spain now, one of the big concerns in financial markets is whether the Spanish government has the financial strength to be able to provide the assistance to its banking sector that most people think is going to be needed going forward. If you had the kind of banking union that the European Commission envisages, that concern might not be so acute. So if you like, Germany, among others, would be taking some of that strain, which of course would be politically difficult in Germany, but you can, I suppose, see some sort of financial logic to it.
A sharing of the burden. The BBC's Andrew Walker in London. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
With borrowing costs spiking for Spain and Italy now, the Obama administration has sent a top Treasury official to Europe to encourage, strongly encourage, European leaders to take decisive action on their financial mess. Christopher Wirth reports from London.
Leo Brainard is the Undersecretary for International Affairs at the Treasury Department, and she's come to Europe with little time to spare. With an election on the horizon in Greece and worry Spain could seek a bailout, Christian Schultz of Germany's Berenberg Bank says these next few weeks will be key to resolving the debt crisis in Europe.
So it is a very good moment, I think, to send an envoy and try and influence the debate in Europe. An economic crisis anywhere in the world, which could have a material impact on the U.S. economy, would be very negative.
Brainard will likely try to get European leaders to promote growth, increase their bailout fund, and make clear that a Greek exit from the Eurozone would have a huge impact on the global economy. The question is, will anyone in Europe listen? Karsten Brzeski is with ING Bank in Brussels.
I'm not saying that they will show her the cold shoulder, but I think they will at least show some reservations.
He says the U.S. may still be the biggest economy in the world, but its influence in Europe is limited. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
The yield on the 10-year Treasury note, the benchmark cost of U.S. debt, hit a record low this morning. It's now at about 1.6%.
Josh Brown is vice president of Fusion Analytics here in New York. He joins me now. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
So, Josh, why are U.S. bonds hitting a record low right now?
You know, this is the same risk-off trade that's occurring around the world. And in theory, at least, U.S. Treasuries, specifically of the 10-year variety and shorter, are essentially the risk-off trade. That's the place to be if you're worried about asset prices, stock markets, commodities, et cetera, continuing to sell off.
Now, we're seeing the opposite situation in Europe this morning. We got word that Spain's borrowing costs have hit a high for the year, 6.5%, that compared to our 1.6%. Borrowing costs are rising in Italy, too. What does that mean for Europe?
Well, it's certainly not welcome news. You know, the Europeans, I suppose, think that they have an infinite amount of time to have these fantastical summits and debates. But truthfully, what's been happening for the past 2 years is starting to speed up again. We had a little bit of a respite, but now the game from last fall is back on. Headlines, rumors, comments from various ministers of all sorts of acronyms, and the market is basically saying, we don't believe that Spain has a credible solution, number one, and number two, their arms around just how big this problem is.
How serious is the situation in Spain? Is this like the next Greece?
Well, it's being treated like it's the next Greece. It's a very different country and situation than Greece. But the similarity that both have, obviously, is an unsustainable debt level, banks that have way too much in terms of liabilities. And, you know, once again, like Greece, there really isn't any realistic plan other than pounding their table, demanding that the rest of Europe do something about it.
Josh Brown with Fusion Analytics. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
A senior Iranian military official said today that Iran's oil industry was affected for a time by a powerful computer virus. It's believed to be a version of the so-called flame virus that eavesdrops and snatches data. How long until the flame virus trickles down to a corporation near you? Marketplace's Queena Kim reports.
Flame can steal documents, take screenshots, and lift data from cell phones that use Bluetooth. It's the mobile part that businesses should be especially concerned about, says Harry Sverdlov. He's a chief technology officer at cybersecurity company Bit9.
You have to now think about all of your employees as potentially bugged employees.
Sverdlov says companies have focused on protecting computers, but they're now realizing they're also at risk in the mobile world.
When threats like this occur, business is good.
And it might get better. Gary McGraw is a chief technology officer with the cybersecurity company Citigel.
Now that this attack has been identified, people are going to copy it.
And people like McGraw will make it their business to try and stop it. In San Francisco, I'm Queena Kim for Marketplace.
Later this week, we'll find out how many jobs the U.S. economy created in May, as well as what the unemployment rate is in this country. While the jobless rate is slowly declining, there's one segment of the population that will always have trouble finding work, ex-cons. But as Yolanda Perdomo reports from station WDCB, two companies in the Chicago area are only hiring ex-cons.
At a coffee roaster in Wheaton, Illinois, Louis Dooley sifts through sacks of beans to be processed. The company is called I Have a Bean. Dooley joined in 2010 after serving 15 years for assault.
If they're willing to give me a chance and don't even know me, you know what? I'm going to work my tail off for these people, and I'm going to show them they made the right choice by choosing me.
Owner Pete Leonard says he wanted to give people a second chance. Leonard says when he worked for a software company, a coworker was jailed.
When he got out, our insurance company for our business said, there's too much risk. You got to fire this guy.
All seven of his employees served time for a variety of crimes, from forgery to armed robbery.
We end up knowing, as an employer, much more about the risk associated with any individual because they've listed what their issues are.
But many employers look at the stats. A Pew study shows that 43% of felons in the U.S. end up back in jail. Employers can bypass qualified applicants who happen to be ex-cons, according to labor analyst John Challenger.
Those people put their time in. They need to find their way back into the workplace. Taking a chance is one of the ways that change happens.
Welcome to Felony Frank's. Are you ready to plead your case?
On Chicago's west side, a hot dog joint called Felony Frank's sells items like the Chain Gang Chili Dog and the Misdemeanor Wiener. The place is controversial not because it only hires ex-cons, which it does, but for making fun of their jail time. It doesn't bother Kevin Jones. He's worked there for 3 years after serving time on drug charges.
It's given me the opportunity to see my own self-worth is a lot more than what I even envisioned. Sometimes it takes other people to see things in you that you don't see yourself.
In Chicago, I'm Yolanda Perdomo for Marketplace.
Research in Motion, the once high-flying maker of the BlackBerry device, is on the ropes. RIM warned investors yesterday that it's shaping up for a loss in the first quarter. Significant job cuts are in the works, and it's hiring bankers for a strategic review of the company. Marketplace's Amy Scott has more.
RIM says it's hired bankers from JP Morgan Chase and Royal Bank of Canada to help review its business.
It sends a signal of they've finally realized the sense of urgency that they faced for many quarters.
Stephen Beck is a telecom consultant with CG42. In the battle of the smartphone, BlackBerry is losing to the iPhone and Google's Android. Beck says there's only so much bankers can do for the company.
While at the end of the day, they do need to, I'm sure, do some things to shore up their balance sheet, and the bankers are going to be very helpful for that. What they aren't going to do is create the next new product that is going to help them get out of the situation that they're in.
RIM is pinning its hopes on the new BlackBerry 10 handsets rolling out later this year with a new operating system. But Beck says it won't be a single product that saves the company. He says RIM needs to shore up its still devoted base of customers who like the BlackBerry's security features and then focus on what's next. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
In an effort to revive their brand image and win back market share from Coke, Pepsi is launching a new hip partnership with Twitter. Today, Pepsi revealed the details. Free downloadable songs and live streaming music concerts. Pepsi followers will be able to play DJ by suggesting set lists and hopefully guzzle more Pepsi while they do it.
Natalie Zamuda is a reporter with Advertising Age and has been covering Pepsi's new marketing strategy with Twitter. Good morning, Ms. Zamuda.
Good morning.
So this is, as I understand it, the biggest Twitter marketing campaign to date. Do you think it could work for Pepsi?
You know, I think it's definitely going to get plenty of attention for the brand. And what's interesting in particular to me about this is that it's a year-long partnership. So this isn't just something that they're doing for the summer or doing for the next couple of months. They've committed to this partnership for the next 52 weeks.
I'm trying to understand this. I mean, you think of Twitter, you send tweets, but this is connected to music, downloads, DJ set lists. How do you think it works? Any idea?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's it really does utilize all of the aspects of the Twitter platform, which is another reason why it's really interesting to me in particular. So there's going to be, if you go to Pepsi's Twitter handle, there will be a video embedded at the top of their Twitter profile page. So you'll actually be able to see the live streaming from that embedded video, and there will be a link that you can send around so that others can then view that video as well.
Why is Pepsi using music to reach consumers in this way?
Sure. Teens are a huge focus for the brand, and that's where both Pepsi and Coke actually see a lot of growth. They see their next generation of drinkers as really being teens because there's going to be such a huge population. There's going to be a huge number of teens coming into the market, and not just in the U.S., but globally in China, India, Pakistan, which is why it's important to note, too, that this partnership with Twitter is global, and music is a great way to reach those important teen consumers.
So there's the cool factor of music, but then there's Twitter, which does seem to have this kind of instantaneous connection that it seems to make with the consumer.
And that's actually, it's a really interesting point because Pepsi's current marketing campaign and tied to their new global positioning, in fact, is all around live for now. So what they're really trying to do is position Pepsi as a brand that is about living in the moment, about the excitement of now. So Twitter was a perfect partner for them for a lot of reasons.
Well, Natalie Zamuda, reporter for Advertising Age, thank you very much for this.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Shrimpers in Alabama and Mississippi begin their harvest today. Warmer than usual temperatures along the Gulf Coast have created conditions that have allowed officials to give the green light to shrimping 2 weeks ahead of schedule. Bridget Elskin Galloway reports from Birmingham.
After the BP spill, the multi-billion dollar Gulf Coast seafood industry was basically shut down. Now, 2 years later, things are looking up, at least for shrimpers. No one knows the extent of the recovery yet. But this morning, a fleet of more than 100 shrimp boats cast their nets to begin the harvest. Greg Ladner owns Sea Pearl Seafood.
It is an economic boost to everyone because the earlier they get it, the sooner they make money, and hopefully the season lasts for quite a while and they catch a lot of shrimp.
And that boost is expected to trickle up about 300 miles north. At Gulf Seafood Market in Birmingham, Solomon Tang anxiously awaits delivery of fresh brown shrimp.
We sell a lot of shrimp, especially like during this time. Shrimp gumbo, shrimp ball, steamed shrimp. I like shrimp ball. That's one of my favorites.
The opening of shrimp season on the Gulf Coast will also mean fresh shrimp and fresh cash for seafood sellers all over the country. In Birmingham, I'm Bridget Elskin Galloway for Marketplace.
There are 12-step programs for things that hold us back in life. Think about alcohol, maybe overeating. What about not living up to our paycheck potential? In the June issue of Harper's Magazine, Genevieve Smith goes to Under-Earners Anonymous. Ms. Smith, good morning.
Good morning.
So before you went on this journey of discovery, you yourself felt a bit like a person who doesn't earn quite what your potential is?
I think that's right. I think that a lot of us now are dealing with readjusting our priorities. And I definitely had started to feel what I think is a pervasive anxiety that we were never going to get the kind of financial security we all assumed was definitely happening.
So in the beginning, who did you blame for that?
Well, I think I worked at Harper's for a while, and the tendency is to see it as systemic problems, to see that there are huge issues of poverty, of a lack of proper job training that is preventing a lot of us from achieving what we thought we were going to have.
But there's a different thesis here. Some believe maybe it was you, and maybe you needed some improvement. So where did you go? It's called Under-Earners Anonymous?
Under-Earners Anonymous is a 12-step program. It's based on the same idea as Alcoholics Anonymous. And the idea is that under-earning is a disease where you can work on yourself by taking steps. And then they also give some more practical tools, keeping track of your time, creating a budget, and asking for the amount of money that you deserve.
Do you think the process helped the people that were in that group?
At a minimum, people were there, got out of their own shell. They got out of these feelings of loneliness and despair that were preventing them from getting a footing and starting their lives over. And that model, that optimism, can really breed a lot of hope. And it can be the thing that keeps you sending out resumes when you've only gotten rejections.
What about the basic, let's call it a philosophical issue here, which is, who's to blame for all of this? Do you accept this notion that the fault, dear Brutus, lies somewhat within ourselves if we're not earning what we should?
I don't tend to see it that way. I do think that there are a lot of things, a lot of pressures that are beating people down and making them feel hopeless. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that we can't have some agency over our own lives and that we can't take proactive steps.
Genevieve Smith wrote the piece In Recovery, 12 Steps to Prosperity in the June issue of Harper's. Ms. Smith, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, David, Mark Zuckerberg has been losing face, or, well, at least face value.
Uh-huh.
Shares of Facebook, as you know, have been dropping pretty steadily in the week and a half since the company started selling stock. And the 28-year-old Zuckerberg has lost more than $4.5 billion in the last 11 days. The kicker, he's also lost his place on Bloomberg's index of the world's 40 richest people. Poor guy is now ranked 41st. He is currently on his honeymoon in Italy, where he has reportedly not been tipping his waiters.
Well, maybe he's not liquid. Maybe all those investments are tied up in some kind of option kind of thing. All right. And finally, it is not just Google with the driverless cars. A consortium of European companies has just done a road test of a system where specially equipped cars join a convoy, link up electronically, and then hands off the steering wheel and pedals. The car drives itself like a boxcar in a train. It was a Spanish highway, 124 miles. Nobody crashed. In English, the project is called Safe Road Train for the Environment, acronym SART, like the philosopher. Of course, you don't need a driverless car to contemplate existentialism when you're behind the wheel. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
On APM, American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI?
I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.